Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the FitPro Firepower podcast. And today I've got a good friend of mine, Matt Luxton, on. Matt is the owner of Blast Fitness Camps in Cornwall. If you're listening to this anywhere that's not the UK, Cornwall's kind of down in the bottom left corner, down in the southwest, not too far from my home island. And it's pretty much one of the few places in the UK that actually reminds me of Guernsey, very much a sort of a rural area. And Matt's obviously built a successful business out there, so we're going to dive into kind of what he's been doing, how he's built things up, and where he's going next. Matt was actually awarded the Fitness Entrepreneur of the Year award. I used to run an event called the Fitness Entrepreneur Bootcamp at the time with Dax Moy, and we awarded Matt the award for the most innovative coach in the UK, largely because he managed to niche his business in a very unique way, basically taking advantage of the sort of the equestrian market, which is kind of close to his heart in Cornwall, and then he sort of branched out online with that. So we're going to have a little chat about that. And one of the many reasons I wanted to get Matt on is because he's very customer focused. Obviously, he does implement the marketing strategies and things like that, but largely his business built up like mine by being very customer focused, being very good at what he did first and foremost, and not being sort of too obsessed about Facebook ads and things like that. And I think Matt will actually tell you, he was same as me, like actually built up most of his business before Facebook ads came in. And I think that's something a lot of people miss these days. We kind of got obsessed with how do I make it on social media? That's where most of my clients are going to come from. And we forget about just being really fucking good at what we do. The other thing that's quite entertaining about what Matt's done is he's trained a guy, or been part of the training team, for a very bizarre world record in sheep shearing. So we'll talk about that again. And finally, what's really good for me about Matt is that I see a lot of fit pros these days who are building good businesses. There's no doubt they're making good money. But when you ask them about their own training, you ask them about life in general, it turns out that they're pretty much a slave to their own business. They're working 90-hour weeks, and you've got to go there. I certainly did it, when I sort of opened my fitness camps in the gym. But ultimately, you have to start asking yourself, well, am I living the life I want to live? And Matt is actually at this moment out in New Zealand. He's just competed in an Ironman out there, placing seventh as well. So he's doing very well, doing it at a high level whilst running the business. And for me, that is hugely important as an entrepreneur, that you're actually building a life that you want and not just sort of stashing up money. And the phrase that I use, I stole it from Jim Carrey, is being careful that you don't succeed at what you don't want. And it is very easy to go down a direction, feel like you're being successful because the money's building, the clients are building, but one day you wake up and go, shit, this still isn't what I want. And like I said, Matt's managed to balance that. Ironman in particular, very, very high volume of training, very time intensive, and Matt still managed to balance that in building his business. So Matt, welcome. Thank you for joining me actually, you're not that far away from me now over in New Zealand. I'm actually in Phuket in Thailand at the moment, so we're not as far away as we would be in the UK. So tell us why you're in New Zealand, actually. You can tell us a bit about the Ironman, but you're also doing some work out there, I believe.
Yeah, so probably around about, beginning of September 2017, so sort of 5 months ago, I decided that I wanted to do the Challenge Wanaka Ironman. It's an iconic race. It's not the largest race in the world, but it's one of those iconic races, bucket list races in triathlon. So it's 3.8 kilometer swim, 180k bike, and 42 kilometer run. So it's a long distance triathlon, and it's just one that's in a beautiful area of the world, in the South Island in Wanaka. And so that's basically the reason I came out to do the triathlon that we did, and sort of coupled that with visiting some people that I've been working with the Shearing World Records. So I've been helping those guys get ready for the sort of the pinnacle competition of the year. So I've just been up in the North Island for a couple of weeks and just making sure that they're ready to go for that. So that's kind of how I ended up in New Zealand. It's actually having an amazing sort of busman's holiday, shall we call it.
So tell us a little bit about the whole sheep shearing and, you know, how did that come about? Well, I believe, was it the 24-hour record? Like, what does that actually involve? What's the objective here?
Yeah, so it wasn't a 24-hour record. So just, I can't do that industry justice, but in this podcast alone. But basically, the shearing industry, sheep shearing industry, obviously sheep have to be sheared every year. Millions and millions of sheep, I think something around 70 or 80 million, I might be wrong on that, but that's a number I heard about the other day. 80 million sheep alone in New Zealand get shorn every year. Well, you think their population here is close to 6 or 7 million, I believe. Gives you a bit of perspective on how many there are running around. So sheep have to be shorn every year. Otherwise they get illnesses and diseases and stuff, so they have to be shorn. And the shearers do between 8 and 9 hours a day average shearing out here in hot conditions. And long story short, the guys at the top of the game do these records. And the record that we held with initially was a 9-hour record on ewes. So you've obviously got your lambs and you've got your ewes. So these are the bigger sheep, weighing between sort of 55 and 65 kilos in a record competition. And they're doing 9 hours of shearing with short breaks in intermittently throughout the day. The chap that I help do, a prolific shearer, shears huge volumes of sheep for the last 20 years. Mm. And his wife, I actually went to school with in Launceston in Cornwall. She married Matt, the Kiwi guy, and he came over to the UK and he set up his farm and basically wanted to do the 9-hour record, which is like the pinnacle competition in that sport.
Okay. Yeah.
So he did 9 hours, did 731 sheep. So he broke the record by 10 on that occasion. And I just helped him with his training and his nutrition. And one of the things that really got me, and I've played, semi-professional rugby, and I've played and trained alongside of some guys who play at the top level, and also amongst Ironman, being at the World Championships, you see some of the top athletes in the world. So I've been around those kind of people, mm. and I know how they behave and how they look and how they, how fit they are. And I can honestly say that I'm yet to see anybody who was in as good a shape as Matt was for that particular record. So give you an idea, if you times 730 by, let's say, 60 kilos, and you have to drag that, and move that weight between 5 and 10 meters, and then it's wriggling beneath you all day, you get a bit of an idea of sort of how demanding that can be. People have tried to compare that to other sports. You can't compare it to any other sports. It's because of the mobility and the positions that's required, and obviously the energy, energy required is massive. As I said, I can't do that record day any justice on this conversation, but just suffice, they are amongst the fittest people in the world. There's no doubt about that.
So what sort of training are you doing with those guys? Because obviously just the nature of their job, they're active all day. What was the focus with the sort of training sessions in terms of dedicated gym time?
Yeah, so I mean, I've dealt now with a number of different shearers, but for Matt, who broke the 9-hour record, then a year later, we Mike, who works for me, helped coach Roland, his brother, to do the 8-hour record. And basically, they're both very different athletes, so very different. Roland's 6'6" plus, and Matt probably nearer 6 foot and a lot sort of stockier build. What we did for him, if you think about the amount of weight that was needed to be moved around, we did a lot of strength training. I think where a lot of people had perhaps fallen short with their record attempts before is they just weren't strong enough. So very, very capable technically, but just weren't strong enough. So we focused a lot on, so we used, quite a few Olympic lifts. We did a lot of work on sort of hamstring and lower back strength as well. But we also used the barbell and dumbbell complexes that have been used by Dan John and people like that. So we used a lot of those and adapted some of those to suit the shearing records. So we used a lot of volume and load. So we kind of worked out how much volume. It was very important that we knew kind of how much volume he was lifting. We did a lot of mobility as well. And it's quite, I mean, it's quite important to state that, you know, not all of these sessions were flat out. So, you know, it was some of the sessions during a sort of a 3 or 4 week block were hard, really hard. And others were just kind of based around keeping these guys mobile, keeping them healthy. Because, as you said, they're working very, very hard during their day. So we would tend to get them to the studio first thing, early doors, so that they're not obviously training on a tired body. They've had a sleep and they're kind of, they're getting the best quality work done before work. So plenty of strength work interspersed with some mobility and no impact. So I think it's really important for those guys in the lumbar spine. They've got a lot of strain going through there anyway. So we didn't do any running with those guys at all. So just to keep the pressure off all the joints, really.
So in terms of sort of aerobic capacity, then are you leaving that sort of up to their job, or was there any sort of aerobic work done?
Oh no, there was. We used rowing.
Okay.
We used rowing for that, and again, you know, obviously that fits into the parameter of low impact, but also, you know what comes about when you're doing those complexes. We kind of get two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
You know, we would use other things as well. So, you know, other conditioning tools like, you know, like the prowler, like tire flips, like sandbag drags. We had some really random sandbag dragging positions that we were doing, and they really didn't look like a typical gym program. I mean, it really didn't. In fact, you probably get kicked out of most commercial gyms if you started doing some of the things we did, because it just looked different. It was very interesting, and because they're such a humble group of people, and they just know how to work hard anyway, so it's more about encouraging them and giving them the tools to look after themselves better.
Yeah.
So it's just about helping them be healthy and being respectful of the fact that they work ridiculously hard on a daily basis anyway. So
what sort of nutrition approach did you take with them? Because I mean, my family is also kind of like farming stock, and my granddad was one of these. It was three meals a day. It was high carb, high fat, high everything, but he was burning it off. You know, he was more sort of bales of hay and sacks of potatoes and stuff like that. Where do you sit with that in terms of the huge calorie expenditure, but, you know, making sure they're staying healthy? What sort of approach were you taking?
Yeah, it was dead simple. We knew from a blood test that Matt, he's had blood tests done previously, we knew he was better on proteins and fats. So we basically encouraged him to eat the things that we knew were kind of good for him, proteins and fats, and then we just topped up with carbs in and around training. And obviously after, we treated his big shearing days like a training session. So we would recover from a training session the way we would try to recover from a big training session, you know.
Yeah.
So it was protein, you know, fairly high protein and carb drink for after training, and then back into his normal sort of eating pattern after that. And it was very much based around sort of clean, whole, natural foods, plenty of green veg and salad in there as well. Probably like most mornings, because they're busy, then we just get them to make a smoothie up and just make sure there's some greens and some berries in it, so that they get something in them before they go off to work. Because some of these guys start work in New Zealand, they'll start work at sort of 5 in the morning.
Yeah, right.
And others, you know, in the UK, a little bit different, but, you know, nothing for them to be on the road by sort of 5 o'clock in the morning, driving to the farm to get set up, ready to go for even if it was a 7 o'clock start, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what we did with them. Very much based around sort of energy rather than there was definitely no calorie restriction. And actually, Matt dropped around 12% body fat in preparation for the record.
Wow.
So he went from about 22% down to about 10% on the record day. And he, as I said, he was in great shape, and as was Roland. But Roly didn't need to lose as much because he was a lot different type of athlete.
Yeah.
His was actually more about, in fact, his was definitely more about putting weight on. So it was making sure we kept the fats high for him as well.
Cool. Right.
I was going to say, we also, you know, in terms of nutritional strategy, it was the massive part of it was hydration. So we had both of them go to a lab and have their sweat analysed. so that we could know exactly sort of how much electrolyte we were going to give them every 7.5 minutes during the record. So that was all planned out, and carbohydrates basically use a lot of the sort of nutritional information or sort of applied within an Ironman as well. So I kind of use what we do there yeah. with those guys on the record. So we made sure we kept the kept their carbohydrates up during the day. We would weigh them at the start and the end of each sort of interval of shearing that they had, just to make sure that we were on target.
Neither
of them lost more than a kilo all day.
Wow, awesome.
Which when you think they're shearing for 8 or 9 hours. Matt, when he did his record a good number of years ago back in New Zealand, his first record he did, he lost nearly 10 kilos and ended up in hospital. So, So it was about, you know, things have moved on in that industry now. We, you know, we're educating shearers and we're doing seminars around helping them not just to do records, but just in day-to-day, you know, work. So, hydration was a massive part of that.
Wow, cool. That's really interesting. I never really would have thought of sheep shearing as like an endurance sport, but that's interesting stuff. Cool. Right, let's get into some business stuff then. So I gave a very brief intro, but can you just give us kind of a snapshot in terms of how your business has developed, like when it started, some new products and services, and how it grew?
Yeah, so I suppose right from the off, sort of 16 years old, I took my sort of, you know, basic gym instructor's award. I did that sort of as early as I could. I really soon got frustrated with the fact that I couldn't really give advice to people that, you know, that I wanted to. And don't get me wrong, at that age, I had some input to give people, but nothing, you know, obviously nothing like you have now. But it soon became apparent that I was going to work for myself. So went to university. Alongside that, studied all different courses I could, and then that was in sort of in June 2008. I went to Los Angeles and Venice Beach, Gold's Gym, where I basically wrote a letter to the manager and asked if I could do some work experience, obviously for free, found some accommodation, and then basically turned up at the gym most mornings at 4, sat there with my notepad. I still got a notepad now, making notes on all of what I saw around me, different trainers, different things they were doing. Went to a functional training summit in Long Beach. That's where I kind of met people like Martin Rooney and Carlos Santana and Mike Boyle and John Berardi, and met all of those people for the first time, and it was a massive eye-opener to what was out there. Yeah. And that really sort of lit me up in terms of coming back in September 2008 and setting up my business, which ultimately I'm very proud that I did it the way I did, in terms of I didn't ask for any money off of anybody else. I just grew it organically, started it off basically, using a few bands and a few bits of equipment that I'd sort of worked for over the summer on a golf course, as it was, and sort of used that to pay for some equipment that I wanted initially. And I just drove around to pay for some flyers and did a few flyer drops. They were, if you look back on it, they weren't that successful, but they were all I needed to get going. So I was really happy to get my first few clients and drive out to their house and do the sessions for them. And then it sort of built from there quite organically, and moved to a little place above a sports shop and started training a few more people there, and they'd come to me, and it was a lovely little, you know, place for them to come. And then I kind of outgrew that, and then I went to my mum's place. She had a barn conversion, so I used that for a while, and it grew from there again. And along then, around that time of at that point in time, we were, you know, just before that actually, we started up our fitness camp. So we had a personal training business in this location, and we had our fitness camp in another location. So that was how our business model split at that point. And that personal training at that point was one-to-one. Once we then started to get busier in the hours in the morning, Mike, who works for me, he's worked with me for a long time. He started to do the early morning sessions at the studio, and we actually then started to do what we called our semi-private training model. So obviously there's probably a good few listeners who kind of know about Alan Cosgrove and what he did. So we kind of looked at the way he did things and just adapted it to suit us. So then just really recently, just over a year ago, we moved to a purpose-built premises, which I bought. So I bought the land and built this premises that I'd kind of been dreaming of since probably June 2008, to be honest with you. And I opened up this time last year, and it's yeah, it's going from strength to strength. You know, obviously the people that we're helping are able to train in a nicer, bigger environment, bespoke. So that's kind of where we're at now. And obviously along the way, I've sought the advice of lots of different people, as I've mentioned a few of the names, but been studied at the Institute of Human Performance in Florida, done courses and mentorships with Dax Moy, which most people, and I mean this truthfully, like most people would probably, where we live, that would be a good mortgage for them. I've spent on education with those guys, and I'm absolutely pleased I did, because it's been able to give me that kind of customer focus, results based focus to start with, and then from that you can build.
So one thing I'm interested in is the, obviously you've bought this property, like what was the decision there? Why did you choose to take on your own property as opposed to maybe investing in opening another location or maybe just renting? Like what was the thought process behind that?
I think if I'm brutally honest, it's a bit of security for me in the business. I think for as long as you're renting, you are really in the hands of, the tenancy agreement, shall we say, and then obviously your landlord. So I was very lucky with all the people that I rented space from along the way. Have been absolutely fantastic, and they're the reason that I am where I am. But security expansion was then in my hands. I could start making plans on how I want to develop a business and how I want it to look in the next 10 years. Ultimately, beyond the end of the business, that then becomes, my pension, and being self-employed, it's not like you're going to get a massive payout, at the end of it from anyone else. So, you need to be thinking about kind of how you're going to live once that's finished. Again, it's not all of your eggs in one basket. And you've got different things you can know. If something went wrong, if I wasn't well, or if I couldn't coach people, or for whatever reason, you've got that. And, then it can become a bit of residual income if it needs to. So, keeps the options open, I think, mate, is probably the answer.
Yeah. So obviously, you've kind of outlined how you clearly grew pretty steadily. Like, how do you know, or like, have you kind of known in your gut or in your heart, whatever you want to call it, sort of when the time was right to grow? I know some people, they get, and myself included at the start, you get hell-bent on, I'm going to get as big as I can, as quick as possible. Sometimes it works, obviously you've got to take risks. Sometimes you look back and go, shit, maybe that was a bit too much. How do you make a decision as to when the next step is, or what the next step is?
I think, honestly, in many ways, I'm quite guided by what's in front of me. So obviously the people who were coming into our business were telling me things, giving me suggestions, and actually, if you think sort of when I, if you think back 10 years ago when I started that business, I was 21. I had an awful lot to learn, and the people around me were kind of pretty much old enough to be my parents, and older, and they were giving me some great advice, and they were telling me what to do, and or giving me some ideas, and I'd go away and think about it. And then I'd honestly sit down and say, I've actually got at home like a goal sheet that I wrote down in 2011, of all the different things that how I thought the business might look in my dream, in an ideal world.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but most of it's kind of there, and obviously it evolves all the time. So I think it's probably a combination of being proactive and thinking about what it is, how you want things to look, but also reacting to kind of, right, so this is quite clearly what people need, that seems to be a problem, so how can I help solve that problem? And it might just be as simple as like the time of the exercise class that you're doing, or it might be sort of the method of delivery. So if suddenly you've got a load of people telling you that they can't make it to your location, you need to think of a way of getting your system or your way of doing things to them, which actually we've done really recently with our Facebook Live programs. I've got an awful lot of people who used to work with us but moved away, who are now back working with us because they can.
Tell us about that. How's that working?
So what, as in on the floor? As in how does it actually work?
Yeah, like the Facebook Live. Like, what are you? How does that work? Like, how are you getting paid? How are you setting it up?
Yeah, nice and simple. every day the day before. So if we're Tuesday today, tomorrow Wednesday session will go up today. It's recorded, so it's a follow-along session. So I will either record that, or Karis, who works with me on our group programs, she'll be recording that video, doing the session. It goes into a private group, and people pay a monthly subscription to be part of that group. I do think like whenever I'm doing programs, it's done. It's not just a random workout. We're doing like 24 days where they do something structured each day, and it's progressive throughout the 4 weeks. And we try to do basically every 3 days is like a mobility type session. So got like a, it might be an upper body session on Monday, it might be lower body Tuesday, and then it might be a mobility session on Wednesday, and then the rotation goes on, and obviously the progression within that as well. So yeah, so it's dead simple. People just log into that and literally follow along. With obviously, as we're coaching it, we're giving tips on position, because obviously you can't see what people are doing. And people love it. People absolutely love it. They love it. They just check in. They give us a little, done or green tick below the video, and it's done. And the great thing is as well is I convert all of those Facebook Live videos into YouTube videos, and now I've got, I've only been doing it 3 months, but we've got 72, you've got 72 videos there, all good to go of workouts,
Yeah. So those videos are actually you're sending them out live. It's not a recorded video.
They're all live, as in they're a Facebook Live video, but they are done sort of before. So that, because if you imagine that if we're coaching a session at sort of 6:30 in the morning, I'll be honest with you, I don't want to get up at 5:30 to record a video and then go and do a session. So the video is done the day before, and then they can log in at whatever time suits them. Because some of our clients, they've got 3 or 4 kids, and actually they get up 5 o'clock in the morning and do the session because that's the only time they can do it. Or they'll do it, when the child's asleep, mid-morning, or they'll do it, when they get home from work, or they'll do it, in the evening when they get 5 minutes after the kids have gone to bed. So it's it works well for all of them.
Cool. I think there's a good lesson in that in terms of we were sort of talking before the call about sort of client or lead generation and things like that, is that you've not forgotten about the people who've left your business for whatever reason. I think a lot of people almost, it's easy to kind of take it personally. It's like, oh, well, now they've left, it's because they don't want our services anymore. And often that is not the case. It might be a money thing. It might be a location thing, injuries or whatever it might be. And I think it's tempting these days to constantly be looking to new people all the time. Clearly that is, clearly it's important, but there is a lot of money sort of in your old clients in terms of people who have left. Do you have like a set reconnection strategy? Do you go out to people every few months that have left? Is there any sort of strategy behind that? Or
do you know what I do is, like you said, like, because when people leave, honestly, every time somebody leaves, I think, I hope that was for no other reason than that they just can't work with us anymore for their own reasons rather than anything done wrong. And I don't think if you shouldn't be in this job if you don't think that for a split second, because you're obviously it's not the right job for you. But that said, yes, I have a list from the last 7 years of everybody who's worked with us, and I'll occasionally email them all just to make sure that they're still happy, or that they're doing what they want to be doing. And yeah, we get people back in at that point. But when we actually looking at sort of reconnecting with them, I don't mind sending people a little message. We've got personal relationships with all the people we work with. Nothing wrong with sending them a message and finding out how they are and if they can help them. And I do quite often ask for feedback once people leave. Whether it be through one of the little WooFoo forms that we've got, feedback forms, or actually even just a personal message, everything okay, sorry to hear you're leaving us, anything we could do differently, and we make a note of that. So when we try then to look at different services we offer, I've often thought, oh, that'd be perfect, that person. So I've just given them a call and said, look, we've got this starting. I know when you left it was because of this, so hopefully that was counteract that problem for you and get back into it. So, it's I think the key thing that people have probably forgotten in our industry is that we're dealing with people, and communication is key. And it's not just about, you know, Facebook messages. It's not just about phone calls. It's not just about text. You know, you've got to kind of meet people where they're at with their level of communication. Because, I mean, quite a few of my clients are definitely not on Facebook. So, you know, if you're only reconnecting with people through Facebook, then you're limiting, you know, your market and the amount of people you can help. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, you need to be thinking a little bit more holistically about your communication strategy rather than, you know, just on, you know, Instagram or Facebook. It's just, you know, that's two methods. But, you know, as you and I were saying before the call, you know, Facebook are making it harder and harder now for you to connect with people who are sort of outside of your social circle already. So,
yeah. Cool. Right, so obviously you've mentioned two or three times about the... is there two or three guys working for you now?
So we've got Mike, who I said to, who's a fantastic strength and conditioning coach. Yep. Lovely guy, gets on really well with all our clients. And we've also just taken on Karis, who is who was one of my clients, and I helped her recover from a back injury. And then she said to me, sort of last April, Matt, I think I'd really like to give coaching a go. And I said, well, look, I think you should, if you're passionate about it, I think you should have a go, at least try. And then, so I guided her just on the things that she needed to do in terms of qualifications, and then we've been kind of, obviously she knows the system in terms of how we do things fairly well, so we've just been helping her. Mike and I are just sort of mentoring her through at the minute in terms of moving into more one-to-one coaching and strength coaching. She's obviously got her own personal goals, but helping her with that. So we've got those two who help me on a weekly basis.
Cool. I think there's a key point in there, just while I think of it. You say obviously she was working with you before. And I've had people ask me about, you know, they are literally shit scared about bringing in people. It's like, how do I know I'm employing the right people? You get scared about... It's literally like, to me, when I remember years ago when I went and cycled across America, I pretty much left the camps in the hands of two guys who, you know, turned out to be absolutely brilliant. But I remember sitting on the plane just thinking, you know, what have I done? It's like the first time you leave your baby with a babysitter. You don't know if you're going to come back and like the house has burnt down. good lesson there is that if you can, you know, if you've got an existing, you know, obviously your business is running, you've got to a point where you are able to employ people. For me, one of the best places to look is within that business. Look at your clients, look at your members, especially, you know, if you're trying to find someone who you just need, say, 5 or 6 hours of admin done a week. There's normal, especially in this day and age, there's always somebody who's looking for a bit of extra cash, particularly if it's, you know, they can answer emails when they're sat on their sofa at home. But the key thing is that you're looking for people who already share your values. And as far as I'm concerned, if someone is willing to pay their hard-earned money to be part of your business, there's a pretty good chance they're going to want to get paid to be part of it. So, that's a pretty big lesson there. I mean, where did Mike come from? Was he an existing member? Or?
No, so Mike was actually just a good friend of mine from back... So we used to play rugby together, actually.
Yeah.
And he went to college and I went to UIC in Cardiff, and obviously two of the top sort of sports colleges, if you like, or universities in the UK. Yeah. Mike studied strength and conditioning, and Mike also worked sort of when Launceston Rugby Club, the Cornish All Blacks, as they were known then, were on the up, and they were, you know, competing at a high level within the English Rugby League. Mike was the strength and conditioning coach then. So I was in and around him when I was playing rugby, and I just always had it in my head, if I could get things to a stage where I could get someone like Mike on board, he'd be perfect. You know, he's just a great guy, really humble, super laid back, very different, probably very different coaching style to me. Not very different, because obviously we deliver a very similar system now, but just a different mannerism, but a lovely way of delivery, and we work very, very well together. And it's without his input over the last 5 years, 6 years, I wouldn't be going doing the things I'm doing and helping to, you know, push up the, well, you know, although it's got my name on it, it's, you know, I feel like it's our business. I don't feel like I employ him. I feel like we work together on it, and, you know, very much responsible for much of the growth that we've had. So
So again, it sounds like you already knew that he kind of shared the same values as you.
Yeah, I've got to be honest with you, like, for me, I would always choose someone to work in my business based on their personality before qualification. So obviously we need people who are well qualified and well read and sort of excited to be part of what we're up to, and you know, very, very client centred, and you know, want to try and be the best part of our client's day. But for me, like the that is the most important thing. Qualification is vital, but I wouldn't employ someone based on their qualification. Put it that way.
Yeah. And what do you do in terms of, you mentioned you're sort of, you and Mike are working off the same system. What are you doing in terms of developing systems? How do you keep your team pushing forward? Do you have like regular meetings, regular sort of development workshops, anything like that?
Well, what we do is every Thursday, I'll either meet with Mike or with Karis, and we'll have a chat about how things have gone that week and what we've got coming up the next week. And at that point in time, it's not like we have a set schedule, so we don't go, right, on Thursday the 11th, we're going to talk about dumbbell training. And yeah, I'm just pulling it up earlier, yeah. But you know, we get together. If there's something that he's working on, you know, they might say to me, Matt, you know, I think our medical forms just need looking at, this just needs tweaking slightly now, or you know, when we do our assessment form, like, I think we'd probably be better off taking that out now because we don't use it as much as we used to, but we now do this. So we look at things like that, and we also talk about courses that are out there, so we discuss sort of, you know, future plans for, you know, personal development. We'll talk about individual clients and what we think is right for them moving forwards if their circumstances are changing slightly, because people do.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, yeah, that happens on a Thursday. But on a micro level, it happens most days, to be honest with you. So when we get to a Thursday, it's not like we save everything for Thursday. It might be that we just had a quick chat on a Tuesday about something and we'll really go over it on a Thursday. So yeah, nutritionally, I'm fairly well in charge of making sure that, you know, those things are all sorted out, and then you know, the training systems that we put in place. What we tend to do as well is, so if Mike predominantly works with one client, he'll write the programming for that client, and if I need to cover it, I'll cover it. If I predominantly work with a client and Mike needs to cover it, then I'll write all the programming, and same for Karis as well.
Cool. So it's very much a small improvements, small changes, but done over and over and over again. Sort of, rather than, I know, again, a lot of people almost intimidate themselves out of growth because they're trying to, it's like, right, I want to grow the business, so it takes some, you know, huge gesture, huge change. But actually what you do is just small changes, but religiously.
All the time, mate. Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably, you know, when I was sitting down thinking about the things that, yeah, how we've, or, you know, how I develop things to start with, how we've changed things over time. There hasn't been one week where I thought, Christ, this needs a massive overhaul, because it's kind of getting done all the time. And I think that's what, like you say, when people are starting up a business, they think, oh, I need to like have like, you know, a 12-week nutrition plan written out, and I need to have like a, you know, a program just for men, a program just for women. I need to have, you know, online business, I need to have an offline business, I need to have, like, do you know what I mean? So I think, yeah, people do get overwhelmed with trying to look at so much stuff, and, you know, probably one of the detriments of social media is people look around and they think, oh, you know, this person's doing this, so, you know,
yeah, right.
Some people, I don't even know, I've looked at people before myself and thought, you know, I look up to, you know, certain people and I think, crikey, I'd love to have kind of be where they are. But the reality is that you are, you know, you're on your own journey, and there's people who can help you on that journey, and it's just not being overwhelmed by that.
Yeah, and I think honestly, like, I've had the fortune, like you, to have dinner with, to work with, to study with some of the best guys literally on the planet, and I've learned a lot from that. But at the same time, I also see the sheer work that they put in. Some of them are under hideous amounts of stress, which, you know, that's their choice. I don't know if they like to live like that, but they can at least manage it. They've got the kind of personality that can manage it. They can work till 1 o'clock in the morning, day after day after day. And I think there's a huge misunderstanding about what is capable, you know, what you're capable of working. You know, if you want to work, say, 7 or 8 hours a day, then it's very, very difficult to actually replicate what some of these guys are doing. And quite honestly, the stress levels can literally finish you off. So it is very important to kind of figure out how you work best and sort of what you really want to achieve. So yeah, I think that's a pretty important message there. Cool. Yeah, well, actually, on that note, can you give us a bit of an insight into the kind of like the biggest influences on your direction? I mean, we've kind of covered it a little bit so far, but what has kind of changed your, what or who has changed your thought patterns the most? Like, it might be a person, maybe a quote or an incident, like a life lesson.
I think if I just can't speak about my business without mentioning Dax Moy. Because if I'm honest, like, meeting him was, you know, and I know he talks about, you know, the guru and, you know, light at the end of the tunnel and all that kind of stuff. That is honestly how I felt. You know, I had this idea of setting up my own company and delivering things that help people. You know, I don't mind whether I'm working with people who are breaking world records or someone who just needs that help getting started because they're in such a rut. I don't mind. I literally get as much satisfaction out of both. Yeah. Different skill sets, obviously, but, you know, I really do. And I think for me, like, you know, Dax was a massive help in getting me started on what I wanted to achieve. And obviously, you know, I liken it as well. If you think about, like, at that time, I was the little bit of chicken in the Tupperware box. And what Dax did is he basically put a fork on the table and enabled that chicken to be lifted up. Yeah. And so he could see the rest of the table.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that's what Dax did for me, and I've seen him do it time and time again for different people. You know, he shows them the light, shows them what's available to people, you know, what's out there, and just opens your mind. So I think he always, and that's why I asked him to come and open my studio last year. And, you know, geez, I wasn't sure if he'd be able to, because he's a busy guy, as we've said. Those people at the top of this game are working incredibly hard behind the scenes to make things happen. So I was absolutely honoured that he was there. And so that's one. I think my mum, and I know probably people listen to this and think, well, you know, but my mum's like got an incredible work ethic, and sort of the way she deals with people as well. And I think her people skills. I'm not trying to big myself up, but the reason I'm working in dealing with the people I am is because of, you know, I can talk to people and I can help them. I can resonate with them no matter whether they're a mum or whether they're whether they're an athlete or whether they're, you know, a business person. I can resonate with them on any levels, and talk and have conversations with them. And as well, I think on that, you know, it's always in the mind that, you know, two ears for listening, one mouth for talking. Because those, you know, those people, like my mum, like those people, they've got a lot to offer. So I think the other thing, so if you were going to go for a quote, is not so much a quote, but something that I always think about is, like, never be afraid to be the dumbest person in the room. So find yourself in situations where, you know, you're not the most knowledgeable person on the topic in the room. And I'll tell you what, like, it's like, I've just literally come back from a 2-day trip now to a gentleman's farm. He owns a 3,400 acre farm in the north of New Zealand. We went and spent some time there. I kid you not. For as far as you could see, he owned that land, and he worked. I've watched documentaries on kind of how he changed his business and changed that farm into what it is now. And, you know, last night I was sat having dinner with him, and he was just talking about how he trains his dogs, the different breeding of his dogs, and, you know, and I know it's got nothing to do with fitness, but all the time, if you find yourself in situations where people who are, you know, if you relate back to fitness, people who know more about fitness and health than you, you'll find yourself moving forwards at a rate of knots, because those people have been there, done it, they know what they're doing, you know, and don't be afraid to pay them for their time, if you can afford to, or if you can't, then you find a way of, you know, paying them metaphorically, you know. I was just going to say, you know, Dax, my mum, and and that little analogy, if you like, about not being this, you know, don't be afraid to be the sort of, you know, the least educated one in the room about any particular topic.
I think you brought up another really good point there about not just sort of focusing on the people in your industry. Obviously, it makes sense to say, okay, that guy's built up a good gym or a personal training studio, that's what I want, therefore I can learn off him. But I think some of the biggest lessons that I've picked up have actually come by just being aware when you're in other businesses that might have nothing to do with yours, or even like you say about the guy with his farm there. For instance, like I've been to Disneyland now 3 times, and I think 2 of them I just went for the whole Disneyland thing, but one of them I specifically went with a business head on. I went with a notebook and looking at how they deliver the service, how they entertain people, how they deliver value. And I mean, you can actually go full bore and actually study with, I think they call it Disney University, where they actually show you the kind of behind the scenes. But it's like whether you're in a restaurant, whether you're in a shop, if you're at Disneyland, whatever, there's always lessons in terms of service, good and bad. Like, we've all been to a place and you just think, how can you be so shit at serving people? And then you can look at your thing and go, oh, actually, maybe I get a little bit lax when I'm teaching my sort of 40th class of the week or whatever. So yeah, I think that's really important as well. Just keep your eyes open. You know, like we said, even if you can take something, I've improved my business by 2%. You know, if you can do that every week in a year, you can have a much better, much different business.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, there's so many things to learn from different people, like whether it's values, whether it's, you know, how they go about, you know, treating their clientele. You know, you learn that when you travel as well, you know, like the different countries that I've been to all over the world, and you know, where you are in Thailand, you know, sometimes that, you know, those people, they just can't do enough for you. Mm. And I think, like, whenever you come back from places like that, you always feel it just really, really drives up your service level.
Yeah.
You know, like out here in New Zealand, people, like, you know, the way I've been treated since I've been here, like, you know, it's just, you know, without making you feel uncomfortable, they really do make you feel at home. And yeah. Like, I just, like, it does really bring you back to earth. Just remember that, you know, we're involved in the service-based industry, you know, and the first four letters of that, you know, to serve, are a part of what we, you know, what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Right. Well, Matt, we're going to have to wrap that up now. Is there, or what's the best place people can find out more about you if they've got questions on sheep shearing or anything like that? Is there somewhere they can get hold of you?
If it's a specific question on sheep shearing, I am of no use. But if it's in terms of on how to help people in their own, you know, in their own little niches, then I've got a little blog called mattluxtonhealthandfitness.com. Obviously, I'm on Facebook and places like that. So, you know, you can just Google me and find me and find my website and make contact through the website.
Cool. Well, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's good to catch up. I'm sure we'll catch up maybe when I'm back in the UK, if I ever am. Otherwise, I'll keep track of all your crazy adventures.
I'll pop into Thailand on the way out.
Pop into, mate, do it. It's pretty much on the way. You said you were coming to Singapore, so.
Yeah, just sideways a bit.
Around the corner. All right, guys. Well, thank you to you guys for tuning in. As always, make sure you check out the podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And check out the Fitness Business Freedom Program if you need some specific help on absolutely anything. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Matt. And I will see you all very soon.